Ironton in Charlotte, North Carolina, and welcome to another edition of the Carolina Weather Group for this Wednesday, December 13th, 2023. We have a pleasure each and every year catching up with North Carolina-based storm chaser Mark Southup. He's also a filmmaker. You know him out of Wilmington, North Carolina, and his website, hurricanetrack.com. Well, this year we had the pleasure of catching up with Mark a little early as he joined us for our Weather Pods Disaster Relief Telethon supporting the American Red Cross. This week on the Carolina Weather Group, we're going to revisit that conversation with Mark and our special guest host, Brad Panovich, chief meteorologist at WCNC Charlotte. Here is their conversation as captured during the 8 p.m. hour of our telethon just a few weeks ago.
Let me introduce myself. My name is Brad Panovich. I am the chief meteorologist at the NBC affiliate in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think I've been on many of these podcasts at some point or another, and it's great to see everybody teaming up for this great event. Our 8 o'clock hour, we've got a great guest from the Carolinas as well. You might know him more as Hurricane Track, but Mark Suter is with us. And Mark, I want to do a big introduction for you, but I would let you explain what you do, because you've been doing something that a lot of people have probably just started doing in the last decade. You've been doing it since the mid-90s. So tell everybody on the podcast and listening what it is that you actually do. You are a hurricane chaser, but you are doing some really cool things over the years, and we're going to show some of those videos. But can you explain to our audience what it is that you actually do?
That's a great question, because it's definitely expanded in recent years, but it started with hurricanes, and the idea was to get in them and study what we could with video cameras, and that evolved into these remote cams, just like that one right back there that was used during Hurricane Michael. And so it does a few things. It lets us be in a lot of places at once, and it keeps us safe because there's just some points of view we just can't get. Even the greatest veteran storm chasers, you know, Mother Nature is going to get you if you're not careful. And so over the years, now coming up on 19 years, we've developed these remote camera systems using off-the-shelf technology, and it's all gotten smaller and smaller and smaller, to where now we're basically talking about the size of a lunchbox. Actually, the latest version is smaller than that GoPro box behind me there, the Pelican case. And the idea is just to stream the video live from interesting locations in hurricanes, but also now other impactful weather events. I've always wanted to do that, expand into other, you know, severe weather, winter weather. But it's not just the video. It is also data. We collect wind data, which is very difficult. That is one of the most difficult things to do. And pressure data, pressure is a lot easier because the sensors, the Kestrels, they're cheaper and less prone to gremlins. But in a nutshell, observe, study, and then talk about, make documentaries about, present about mainly hurricanes, but also other big impact weather events, especially over the last 5 to 6 years, really expanded out of just hurricanes.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing. And I think, you know, as a science geek, you love to see the data. But one of the things that's really compelling about these cameras, these remote cameras that you have, is it really shows people who ever think about staying in a storm surge area, what actually happens. And I think it's great that we don't put people in harm's way to show it. We can have a remote camera kind of show how quickly that water rises. You know, we have that saying, you run from the water and you hide from the wind. And I think these cameras do an amazing job of illustrating why that happens. I'm fascinated about the technology because, as you mentioned, it's gotten smaller and easier to do. Talk a little bit about the tech behind this. So how do you keep this thing powered for long periods of time? And how are you transmitting that data back when maybe cell networks are going down, or are you trying to rely on them staying up as long as they possibly can?
Yeah, we're still reliant on the cell networks, and we use Verizon. Verizon, not a sponsor. I'm a paid Verizon customer, proudly. And they just seem to be robust, and nothing against the other networks, but we've used them since about 2012. And so we use a hotspot. And it's interesting, you know, many years ago, I probably wouldn't want to talk about it, but, you know, because you don't want somebody to steal the idea, but, like, you know, go ahead. Like, it's the more the merrier. It's a big enough coast that anybody can try this. I don't have a copyright or a patent on it. And so it's a battery pack, lithium battery pack. Some of them, here's one right here, just like from Anker as an example. This is about a 20,000 milliamp or 20 amp hour battery. So you got to power everything. You got to power the Verizon hotspot. You got to power the Nest Cam. And then you got to keep it all protected. So we use Pelican cases. And there are some people that have started doing this in the last several years using other devices. Some are using smartphones. And some folks have had some really good success with it. Max Olson used a similar product to a GoPro during Ian. And he had learned from the work that my team and I had done over the years. And his Ian footage is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great testament to the idea that it's obviously worthy because other people are wanting to do it. I think that's wonderful. And we get to see things because I'm not going to be everywhere, right? I mean, we did well during Ian capturing the effects, but Max Olson's work down at Fort Myers Beach was just amazing because it does show the consequences of staying. And as we know, during Ian, people stayed. And way too many people want the number to be zero, but way too many people lost their lives during Ian. So maybe Max's video will help motivate somebody down the road. And I'm glad that, you know, I want to brag, but I mean, I started it in 2005 and to see where it's come. That's fantastic. And it's great to see other people sort of doing it as well. Honestly, it is. And we'll see where it goes.
So I assume there's a lot of prep work for this, right? You got to find the location. Like what's that process like? Like you try to pick the most visually appealing area or an area that's more surge prone, an area that has some kind of marker that will let you kind of discern in real time what's going on. How do you choose the locations for the cameras?
So part of it comes from experience, been doing this long enough and we've had enough hurricanes, unfortunately for the public, hitting land the last 19 years, that there are not too many areas of coastline now that we're not familiar with. And Louisiana was the toughest, and we got into Louisiana a lot in 2020 and in 2021 with Ida. Luckily, Louisiana has been left alone ever since. But knowing people through social media, people reach out to us. They say, hey, we've got a property somewhere and you can put a camera on our porch, or, you know, somebody in law enforcement or emergency management. And that's why it's important to go to these conferences, whether it's the National Hurricane Conference, one maybe the longest running hurricane conference, or the very small but just absolutely intimate and very important National Tropical Weather Conference, which is geared more towards broadcast meteorologists, that we just get these networks going of who to talk to in certain places. And it's a matter of what the impacts are going to be, even coordinating with the National Hurricane Center directly. Over the years, they've been able to embrace this because it's a responsible method. And so I've literally been texting back and forth with people about where to be. In the Michael situation in 2018, we got that partially because of somebody at the Hurricane Center on the storm surge group that said, you need something in Mexico Beach. And lo and behold, we got it.
What would you say is the biggest hurdle that you guys have? Like, what's your biggest fail point that you've run into that you're constantly trying to battle or correct?
Yeah, that's a great question. Believe it or not, it's the mystery of why a unit will just turn off, you know, where it should have stayed on. And more often than not, it's the weird intrusion of water that still gets into these boxes. And some of them have been underwater and never got anything in there. Some of them have just had water seep in. And we think that it's from the straps. When we strap these things down, we're using ratchet straps. And when we think that we're maybe pushing them too hard, so the O-ring of the Pelican case is getting squeezed just enough that it gives a little bit. And yeah, you got to remember, the hurricane is driving that rain in there, and yeah, you only need a little bit of moisture to get in, and it can just ruin, you know, some of that electronics. But we've started to mitigate that through, you know, Flex Seal, just putting a little bead Flex Seal across the top. Or actually, the smaller boxes are going to work great because there's just not as much to squish, so to speak. Yeah. But I think, you know, ironically, water has been our biggest enemy, that it'll get inside. And then even like the GoPro units, it's a larger area inside of there. The humidity, you know, will try to fog up the inside, the acrylic that's on those things. And you get this sort of foggy look to it. You know, there's the elements. That's a simple explanation. Yeah. The elements. And sometimes the network will go down. You know, the terrestrial network from Verizon, it'll suffer, you know, because it's a hurricane. But more often than not, it's water that's trying to beat us. Isn't that something?
Yeah. You know, on that same kind of vein, like, have you had any manufacturers of like Pelican case cameras, anybody who's really interested in trying to put their equipment through this kind of rigor and maybe approach you or contact you like, hey, we want to see if we can make something better, or at least prove that our stuff works. I mean, you mentioned FlexSeal, which isn't it amazing? I mean, I use that stuff all the time, and I know it's really kind of taken all the different versions of it, but something like that where someone's like, hey, we want to see if this is hurricane proof.
You know, it's interesting. That hasn't happened. And it's more us working together, especially through our crowdfunding community at Patreon, as that's grown over the years, especially the last 5 years. Getting input from other people. You should try this. You should try this. And it's the old Occam's razor, right? That this, all things being equal, the simplest solution is usually the correct one, or whatever it is, close to that. And you just have to try not to over-engineer things and overdo it. And so just working through when we have a failure and just try to determine what caused this. And like I said, usually it's water intrusion, and then how to mitigate that. And yeah. I mean, like the shot there, all that ocean water coming in from Cedar Key, you know, that box did just fine, but you have one somewhere else where the rainwater will just kind of seep in there. And it's so frustrating because we don't know when that's going to happen. But, you know, simple solutions, like, again, we set that box up, have some clear Flex Seal, put it around the top, because we figure it's coming down, gravity's taking over. And just simple things like keeping the batteries with these things here, the inputs or whatever you call them, up inside the box. So if water does get in, they're not down like this in the water. We discovered that. We had a camera in Ian at Marco Island, and it was extraordinary. The surge was coming in. It was beating up this dock in front of it. It was a great live shot. And it just went out. And it was so frustrating. Didn't come back on. Those Nest cams will come back on if the network comes back up. That's what's nice about them. And it never came back on. It was a complete failure. Wow. A couple weeks later, when we could get down there, you know, we approached it from a forensic perspective, took that box down very carefully, opened it up, and it had quite a bit of water inside of it. And the batteries, they were bigger batteries than these, they were all facing down. And so that water was able to wick up inside and get into those terminals. And if, what do they do? It shorted out, of course. So it's like, okay, you know, you just got to remember everything needs to be up, get everything away. It's like in a house, you elevate your stuff, get it out of the flood. You got to do the same with our equipment, and you know, get those the hot spots. We use Velcro and put them up on the top of the case, because the case is sitting up kind of vertical. And so just everything needs to be elevated or facing up. And if any water does get in there, but it's weird because something will get knocked off, like during Hurricane Ida, an entire case got torn off of the column of this restaurant that we had it on. And it floated around for 3 hours. And it looked like something out of the Blair Witch Project. It was absolutely haunting. It was live. And we never found the box, but like it didn't sink. It didn't get water in it, apparently, because it ran for another 3 hours until the network just finally died in that part of Louisiana. So you just never know.
That's crazy.
That's why we have a lot of them.
So yeah. You ever have one stolen? Everyone, yes. Anyone ever taken one?
Yeah. Yes. Sometimes nature steals them. They'll get rid of and whatever. But it's funny. We're almost to last year. Last January, I was in California for a big atmospheric river event. And one of them was attempted to be stolen. We chain them up. There was a homeless woman on a bridge in Pajaro, and I can't remember the Pajaro River, and it had swollen up really big and it was getting ready over the banks, it looked like, and they were evacuating Pajaro. And the live shot was out there, and you could hear this lady coming up. She had a cart and some kind of a music box thing playing this weird music. And she was trying to get the camera down. She undid the straps, but it was chained on, and she was desperately trying to take it. But stolen, like where we know they were stolen, no. I mean, we've lost them where, like I said, we'll blame it on Mother Nature. We've had power poles that snapped, and Laura was the worst. We lost several there in Laura because all the power poles that they were attached to down in Holly Beach, as an example, those snapped and then they washed away in the surge. We searched for 2 days, drone, did a grid, the whole bit. And you think that yellow box would pop out, but yeah, it's a needle in a haystack, and we lost those.
What would you say is your most memorable storm that you guys have caught with cameras, but also you personally have been in?
Michael, I think, is definitely the number one. It was because we were in Panama City for the landfall, so we were on the Western Core, and it was very violent. And we were at a Hampton Inn, and it got torn up pretty bad. But then we were able to make our way through that day and into the evening. I don't know how, but we did. We got to Mexico Beach. And then we walked about a mile and some change to where that box was, and got it that night. And it was still running. 17 hours it ran until we turned it off. And I thought, because Katrina, 13 years earlier, it was a huge defeat. That was the very first time we had done this, and we lost all three boxes. And one of them I found, but I had hit, long story short, I recorded blue screen for 9 hours. It was my fault. I screwed up. User error. So I thought, okay, we know that GoPro was flashing, still recording. And it wasn't until we got up to near Montgomery, Alabama the next day that I took that little chip, you know, it's a GoPro chip. It's one of these guys right here. Mm-hmm. And I put that in the computer. And I was like, oh, this changes everything. We captured Michael from, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning until we came back at 9 something at night. The whole thing from start to finish, Cat 5, right front quadrant, point blank range. That was an incredible moment. And then just experiencing it, the whole thing. Seeing it and the friends we made during it, you know, that Michael's definitely number one for that. I think my cat's out there screaming.
Some good out there. I think we're doing this, you know, this salon to raise money for the Red Cross, which does amazing work during these storms. Me personally, all the type of weather I've covered or been in, there's something about tropical systems and what they do and the impact they have on people's lives. And because we're doing this for the Red Cross, maybe talk about some of the resiliency or the things you've seen, the personal impacts to communities you've seen from these storms, and maybe why it drives you to do more of this to try to help people be more prepared.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the notable things about what I've done since the late 90s, mid 90s and beyond, is being in all these hurricanes, especially the really bad ones, that we get to know people who deal with it when we're gone. And I've been friends with them ever since, a lot of them. And you see exactly what happens, not only to their property, to their community, but their whole way of life. You know, you get these generational events like Katrina, like Michael, like Ian down in Southwest Florida, and, you know, plenty of others, of course. And so you really get an appreciation of what people go through. And so, you know, we call that empathy, that you definitely empathize with people that have to deal with. It's very stressful. And then, you know, if they don't move out of a region, they're going to stay. Future hurricane seasons, everything gets piled on with social media now. It can get very overwhelming. That sensitivity to the fact that people are going to have to go through it again, or, you know, they don't want to hear about it. I mean, you just have to be open to that. You can't do this and then just block all of that out and say, oh, it's a job, I earn an income from it, sorry what happened to your community. It absolutely affects me. And that's why I do these documentaries that I do that, you know, show that and, you know, tell the story more than just the exciting, you know, you can make a 5-minute whatever and put it on YouTube of just all the highlights, but I want to do a broader documentary that shows the whole story and include some of the people that we interact with. And then I was just thinking about stories like when we've worked with, like it was Gustav, you know, members of the National Guard were helping us in New Orleans, you know, because we had our Chevy Tahoe back then. So it was very obvious when we were there, it looked like something, the old Tahoe looked like something out of a movie, right? Now we don't need anything like that. It's a whole different story. But anyway, these young men came over after getting permission from, you know, their higher ups to help us move these big cases that were very heavy back then up into position and whatnot, seeing the Red Cross, working with the Red Cross back during my days working with Lowe's. You know, I remember I did a whole thing, the whole Project Impact thing started, and we had a kickoff at Lowe's there in Charlotte. Yeah. With WCNC back in 1999, I think it was July of 99. And look what happened in August and September. We had Denison's and Floyd that severely impacted North Carolina. So those tie-ins, working with companies and the Red Cross, and you never know who you're going to meet out there. And then the people, you know, we meet these people and that impacts that they went through stays with me, and it helps to motivate me future endeavors. It does.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, so for people watching out here that maybe have been in tropical systems or haven't, or even for the seasoned veteran who's been to the coast, what do you think is the biggest thing that people underestimate about tropical systems and hurricanes? What's the one thing they feel like they're prepared for everything, but there's that one thing that always surprises people?
Rain. And I'm doing t-shirts next year. I'm going to have them. And I said it the other day, we're going to have a t-shirt that says rain is an impact. And I saw a video today on Twitter in the Dominican Republic of flooding. I think people really underestimate the power of rain. And in a warming atmosphere, we're getting higher rain amounts because a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. And that, I think, is what people underestimate the most. And look at what happened with this no-named mesoscale convective vortex.
Oh, just yeah, isn't that crazy? I mean, yeah. That actually had wind damage with it, too.
Right, right. And then I just think generally people not understanding, and I can't blame them because not everybody is a weather geek. A lot of people might be into the weather, but to really get invested where you fully understand how to read a radar image, what that hurricane structure is like, or ooh, this tropical storm is very slow moving, you're probably going to get 30 inches of rain. You know, there's a lot to digest from the public side. But I think that mostly people just underestimate the rain. I'll give you one quick story how I saw it right in front of my eyes. Like, I've driven hundreds of thousands of miles, literally chasing storms, for the lack of a better way to put it, and find some wood around here. And I've never had an accident. Never. All right. And here I am leaving Corpus Christi after Harold. I'm driving up the road and somebody's going past me in a very small, it's on Twitter somewhere. I put it, and the dash cam caught it, and they spun out and rammed into the Jersey wall and ruined their day. And I'm like, you just, rain is an impact. You know, like you just, I don't think they're injured or whatever, but like, I think that's the biggest thing. And then rain can lead to these epic floods.
Yeah.
We see, and I just, people hear wind 150 miles per hour or whatever category. It's like the rain. That's the one that's really sneaking up on us, I think, from a damage perspective in the last 5 to 10 years, maybe longer.
Yeah. I mean, obviously in the Western Carolinas, we deal with that quite a bit. And it is hard sometimes because there's almost so much focus on the coast before the build up to these systems. And people think, well, all these live shots, here's Cantori at the beach, right? And here I am in the mountains or some valley in the western part of the state. What am I worried about? And then that's where we end up having the biggest loss of life or, you know, these flash floods. So it is one of those things that I think we still struggle with. And then when you get into the amounts, I mean, during Harvey, that was the way it was like 30, 40. The public doesn't even grasp what that means. What's 40 inches of rain? What does that look like? You know, they think 40 inches of snow, it's going to be like this 40 inch depth, and that's not what it is. Right. So the visualization is really hard for people to grasp as well. So yeah, I totally agree. I think the rain is a big issue. We're almost done with your half hour here, but before you go, What's the future? Like, what is the next thing that you guys want to do, or your aspirations for what's down the line for the next seasons or the coming seasons?
So in the hurricane world, just more equipment and continuing to work towards getting it in the right places. We think, looking at the patterns for next year, it should be a very active season. We can see that kind of stuff pretty far out in time, the big puzzle pieces, as we call it. And then in the severe weather world, we're actually going to start working on studying hail, a project that I'll be announcing more officially, I guess you could say, in January. I just don't think there's enough emphasis on hail. And for that, we're actually going to go right into it. It's a whole thing we're working on. But really studying and emphasizing and shining a light on hail, because it's causing more and more damage. And in fact, this year over last year was, if I'm not mistaken, 200-something% increase in large hail reports. I saw some tweet about it several months ago. I was like, really? And yeah. So hail research and observation, and just, you know, when they say DVD size hail, like, what do we do about that? Like, I know it doesn't occur in the Carolinas as much, but hail, like heavy rain in a warming environment, is getting to be more prolific. So we're going to, sort of my midlife crisis, I'm going to move to hailstones and throw that into my portfolio along with the hurricanes.
My days of chasing, that was the worst thing, being in a hail shaft. And there's nothing more helpless than being in a car just getting obliterated by baseball size hail. And it's worse. Yeah, I know the Insurance Business Institute down in Chester, South Carolina, that's a big thing they work on, because it is a big driver of insurance claims. I mean, it is so much roof and vehicle damage.
Yes, it is.
So that's great to hear. So tell everybody where they can find you. And, if they want to follow along, or maybe they're interested in your work, where can they find you online or on social media so that they can maybe follow around in the future and see some of these videos?
Fortunately, since the late 90s, Hurricane Track, just Hurricane TRACK, the .com. We really don't do much with the website anymore. I mean, who does? It's usually that's sort of a billboard or a front door, I guess you could say. But I call it Twitter. Anybody else can call it whatever they want.
I'm with you, Mark. It's still Twitter to me.
So we're on Twitter at Hurricane Track, and we do a lot on YouTube at Hurricane Track as well. And then our Patreon, it's all Hurricane Track.
Yeah.
And coming up on, I don't know, it's like 25 years or something like that. I'm very, very blessed to be able to do this and do what I love.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. We really appreciate you coming on. And I'm a big fan of your work. Obviously, been following you for
a long time, man. Yeah.
I remember you coming to Charlotte to do your little Lowe's store tours and stuff with the Tahoe. That was a great time. And it's really cool, because I think it is a great illustration. Your storm surge cameras are amazing. They just really illustrate to what's happening. And I'm a big fan of getting people out of there and letting the cameras do the work. There's no reason to put all these news people out there and have them stand in the middle of this stuff. What are you proving, right?
Right.
Better that the cameras can do it for us. It is a great, great, great thing that you're doing. So Mark, thanks again. I appreciate you coming on. This has been great. And